Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
This episode of Into the Night is brought to you by our loyal listeners and followers. Fazbear Entertainment appreciates your viewership and those who support the show by commenting, sharing, and subscribing. If you wish to support this broadcast, please consider checking out the official merch store and Patreon for more information.
This episode is a continuation of our Security Breach audiobook series. If you haven't watched from the beginning, we recommend starting at episode 26, Security Breach, and listening to all episodes up to this point to know the full context of the storyline so far.
Welcome to Monty's Gator Golf, home to Hurricane Hole-in-One. We're currently closed for the night. Come back soon.
Gregory had never met anyone who genuinely liked Montgomery Gator. Always the bridesmaid, never the bride. Yet he carried himself with the attitude of a bridezilla. The Pizzaplex's rebranding of the Fazbear mascots was carefully engineered to capture attention, reshaping the company's image into something brighter and more animated. The characters were designed to draw the eyes, and their larger-than-life personalities were crafted to enchant children of all ages. While the neon-drenched punk rock aesthetic was a deliberate nod to an older audience, those who might have been more familiar with the so-called rumors surrounding Fazbear Entertainment. Adults who had been children when kids their age were vanishing, or worse, had every reason to see through the company's revisionist history. But as long as Fazbear Entertainment convincingly presented itself as reformed, thriving as Hurricane's economic heartbeat, a tourist hub, a pillar of community engagement, most of them will look the other way. The rebrand wasn't just a fresh coat of paint. It was a carefully crafted fiction, tailored to make the lie more palatable. Fortunately for Fazbears, their mascot appeal remained intact. Even their more controversial figures, Bonnie and Foxy, had been resurrected for a time before yet another generation of animatronics claimed the spotlight. Roxy went over well with the public. She had a lot of fans. Maybe a bit too many. But she was a welcomed addition to the glam rock band at large. Monty, though? Gregory had never met anyone who truly considered him their favorite. He was never meant to be more than a temporary stand-in for Bonnie. Something had happened to the rabbit, something serious enough to warrant full decommissioning, or, at the very least, a long-term cover-up that ensured Monty kept his place in the band. He supposed it made some lick of sense, as the elevator hummed around him, carrying him down to Monty Gulf. Gregory cast a glance at its neon-lit walls. Even if Monty himself wasn't exactly beloved, mini golf was a universal crowd pleaser. And given the options, Monty had been the most seamless replacement available at the time. He fit the glam rock aesthetic, blending into the rebrand better than, say, the daycare attendant or Sheriff Pirate Captain Foxy. But something about it gnawed at him, and it wasn't the usual static haze that clouded his thoughts whenever he tried to piece together how he had ended up here. No, this was different. A deeper kind of wrong, like a parasite burrowing into his brain, writhing just beneath the surface. Something he needed to dig out before it was too late. Why had Fazbear Entertainment replaced Bonnie instead of simply rebuilding him? Swapping out his endoskeleton for a fresh casing should have been easy enough. But the more Gregory thought about it, the more he recalled Freddy's reaction to seeing Bonnie's shuttered stage, how he had stood before it as though it were a gravestone bearing the name of a lost friend. He wasn't just disappointed, he was grieving. And for all the sympathy Gregory felt, there was something disturbingly human about it. Fazbear Entertainment clearly didn't see its animatronics as individuals, even if they were self-aware enough to be classified as such. But Freddy's sorrow wasn't just mimicry. It was as close to genuine human emotion as a machine could reach. Gregory considered his own friends. If something happened to one of them, if they were gone, truly gone, only for someone identical to them to appear, claim to be them, how would he react? Fear? Disgust? Anger? He wasn't sure. It wasn't exactly a human problem, but maybe it was a human equivalent dilemma for Freddy, and perhaps, in time, for the rest of the Glamrocks as well. From what he had seen in the Endo warehouse, Fazbear Entertainment treated them more like toddlers than machines, teaching their behaviors through exposure rather than conventional programming. If they learned to develop like children at the start, what was stopping them from continuing to grow, from reaching their own version of adulthood and maturity? Gregory wasn't sure if Freddy, or any of the others, had ever been replaced. But Freddy was different. He had resisted Vanny's commands, shown an ability to think critically about what was happening in the Pizzaplex, at least more so than his metallic cohorts. If he had reached something akin to adulthood, had he also developed a broader emotional range, enough to comprehend the sheer wrongness of Bonnie's disappearance, enough to recognize that an imposter may have taken his friend's place? It was only a theory, but something didn't add up. There had to be a reason why Freddy stood apart from the others, why Bonnie had been replaced instead of repaired. And if there was a common thread between them, it was Freddy himself. Poor thing. He was still waiting. Gregory hadn't made contact yet, though we could always ping Freddy his location if things went south. But there was something he needed to take care of first. A little pest control. This is episode 42, Bayou Bash. The elevator doors parted with a soft chime before retreating into silence. Green. It was the first thing he registered, not just seen, but felt. It saturated the air, an omnipresent glow cast by dim concealed lights. The walls and floors were bathed in an emerald luminescence, imbuing the space with an ambience of a swamp at twilight. The elevator opened into a balcony walkway, bordered by a two-bar balustrade. Benches, carved into the likeness of a fallen tree trunk, leaned invitingly against the railing, interspersed with plastic foliage. Above each cluster of artificial plants, delicate lights twirled on near-invisible strands of translucent plastic. Fireflies frozen mid-dance, their glow mimicking the gentle bioluminescence of nature rousing at dusk. Beyond the guardrails, the golf course stretched out a level below. Towering trees, molded to resemble gnarled cypress and thick bark found in the bayou, loomed over the course. Their synthetic leaves cast sprawling shadows, yet the pathways remained curiously illuminated, as though untouched by the surrounding gloom. In the depths of the fabricated foliage, where the trees thickened, the trunks and roots vanished into swirling mist, rolling fog produced by concealed smoke machines, hiding within plastic shrubbery and underneath large ball pits, where younger children frolicked while their parents and older siblings struggled for par. The walls stretched high, draped in a deep, dark wallpaper that reached the ceiling. The wallpaper itself completed the illusion of an endless biome, midnight blue broken only by stark outlines of slender trees standing at attention against the shadowed earth. Above where the titanous trees reached their summit, the shadow of a catwalk could be seen beyond the canopy of artificial leaves. In between the hanging grated flooring, smooth movement of plastic green could be seen. It must have been the Montgomery Gator gondola system. Gregory glanced down the length of the walkway and frowned. He had hoped the security office would be close to the entrance. No such luck. The only venue on the balcony was a small alcove occupied by a gift shop stocked with Monty merchandise. At least, that's what it seemed like at first. A closer look told a different story. While Monty plushies, bass guitars, replicas of his star-shaped sunglasses, and souvenir cups with red mohawks dominated the front displays, the store wasn't exclusively his. Nestled among the shelves were products from the rest of the Glamrock gang. Freddy, Roxy, and Chica all had their share of space. Even the older cast had their presence. Foxy, the classic version of Chica, the daycare attendant, and even circus baby plushies were lined up beside Monty's gear. Jeez, Monty really was unpopular. Even in his own attraction, Monty's merch had to be supplemented by everyone else's. Shaking his head, Gregory turned his attention to the larger room beyond. The golf course followed a winding linear path that started from the balcony, descended to the first floor, and wrapped back around to the entrance elevator. Three major landmarks stood out among the artificial swamp. First, a small stage where a looping holographic video of Monty played, no doubt where Monty used to reside and perform when he was here full time. Second, a massive, cavernous maw, an oversized version of Monty's gator head, bursting from the wall, frozen mid-roar. A steady stream of water poured from the back of its mouth, running down the length of its extended reptilian tongue, like a regurgitated water slide. And finally, dead in the center of the course, a food court. Likely a well-placed trap to entice guests to grab a quick bite or snack before finishing the back nine. If he had to guess, there would have to be a security office nearby there, near the middle of the attraction, would mean that personnel could quickly respond. Gregory's eyes widened. Did he just hear giggling? The faint tinkling sound came from behind him, inside the gift shop. He whipped around, raising his flashlight to cut away the hanging shadows. Everything looked the same. Shelves stocked, merchandise untouched. But then, his stomach tightened. Something was missing. The plush babies. All of them. Gregory frowned, stepping cautiously into the store. Were they Buddytronics? He knew about Fazbear Entertainment's half-baked attempt to cash in on the Build-A-Plush craze, years too late to the trend. The Buddytronic boutique was a flop, shutting down mere months after its launch. Officially, it was just another failed fad. But like most things Fazbear, rumors whispered of something darker. Conveniently, the closure aligned with two other abrupt disappearances. The shutdown of Fazbear's AR attractions, and the dismantling of the Storyteller Tree. That tree. When Gregory had fled from the underbelly and made his way to Gator Golf, he took a moment to look into the Storyteller that the engineer working on the Glamrock prototypes had talked about. a massive AI-driven system. Its reach extended to every attraction, every animatronic, at every venue in the entire complex. Something that big just couldn't disappear. But as far as he could remember, the Pizzaplex had never officially closed for its removal. No public announcements, no downtime, just gone. But now, after everything he had seen in the depths of Fazbear's disposal sites, where broken, discarded things festered out of sight, he couldn't shake the thought. Could it still be here? Buried and forgotten deep below ground? Where secrets don't keep? Gregory spun around. His flashlight landed on a single plush foxy, its button eye staring blankly back at him. He let out a breath, one he hadn't realized he was holding. But that giggle, where had it come from? And where were the plush babies? A moment ago, they had lined the shelves. Now, only dust outlines remained, stark and empty, where they once sat. This place was a madhouse. Trying his best to shake it off, Gregory pressed forward, starting his search for the security office by checking each hole individually. Progress was slow, as always, thanks to the staff bots patrolling the first three holes. He could get around them, but they were a hassle, forcing him to move carefully. If necessary, he could stun one with his phaser blaster, but that would only buy him time, not solve the problem. Freddy was still waiting for him, likely growing more and more concerned by the second. Gregory needed to respond soon, but first, he had to find something. His plan to upgrade Freddy with Roxy's eyes hinged on decommissioning her, which meant taking down the others first. Monty's claws were strong enough to tear through the gates blocking Roxy Raceway, and Chica's voice box could override security clearances by overloading nearby electronics. If he was going to lure Roxy into making a mistake, he needed to access her track to rile her up. But first, he had to go gator hunting. From what the logs on Monty indicated on his behavior, Monty was aggressive, adversarial, and downright abominable. He wasn't the type to be lured by a simple distraction. At least, that's what Gregory thought, until he dug into his maintenance reports. Monty had an unusual fixation on the catwalks above his domain. According to a Fazbear tech team lead, Abraham Thayer, Monty had even missed main stage performances because of it. And even better for Gregory, this habit had led to Monty getting damaged in the past. That gave him an idea. The infamous Hurricane Hole-in-One, Monty Golf's final hole, was designed as a flashy way to get guests to return their golf balls. High above the course, suspended over the massive ball pit moat, hung an enormous bucket filled with plastic balls. Even from the earlier holes, Gregory could spot it looming in the air, a giant neon graphic of Monty with his jaw wide open and several arrows pointing at him. A final hole offered one last challenge: sink a perfect shot off a ramp to hit the back wall's target. If successful, the mechanism would trigger, dumping the entire collection of plastic balls onto every unfortunate player below it. Gregory couldn't say it was an enticing feature. In fact, if a semi-truck's worth of plastic balls got dumped onto him mid-game, he'd probably be pissed. But if Gregory could bait Monty into standing directly beneath the bucket on the catwalk, one well-placed shot, and the gator would be taking a long, hard fall. After working his way through the next few holes, Gregory finally located the security office, tucked away behind the food courts in a series of employee-only hallways. The corridor walls were just as green as Gator Golf's mascot, and strangely enough, the air carried the scent of watermelon and lime. The security office itself was small and compact, no different in architecture or even decoration from the countless others he had already sneaked through. The posters were swapped around, and the trash bins held different bits of litter, but otherwise, it was the same uniform Fazbear security station. As had become a habit, Gregory had helped himself to another security badge, prying it from the maw of an adorable Freddy head with a security officer cap. The extra clearance was a nice bonus, but it wasn't the reason he had come here. With the security mainframe synced to his Faz watch, Gregory had already had access to nearly every CCTV system in the Pizzaplex. The problem? There were still too many blind spots. He needed to find a way up to the catwalks, but none of the feeds showed a stairway or access hatch that would get him up there. The maps he had weren't much better. The utility tunnel maps had been a helpful way for navigating the underbelly and avoiding the main routes, but the general public map he had lacked any information on the employee-only areas he needed to infiltrate. That meant he had to find another way, something to give him the reconnaissance he was missing. He had hoped the security system in Gator Golf might offer additional camera feeds not linked to the main terminal, or an internal employee map that would reveal a hidden stairwell he could access. No such luck. The walls were bare of anything remotely useful. Just Monty posters, Fazbear propaganda, and a metal no-flash photography sign. Gregory raised an eyebrow, his lips thinning into a sly smile. Turning away from the camera system, he began rummaging through the lockers lining the walls. Birdie had mentioned that Fazcams were sold in Monty's Gator Golf. He had also mentioned that flash photography was apparently banned in the exact same area. Apparently, it was a clever marketing strategy. To Gregory, it just sounded like a lawsuit waiting to happen, one that any lawyer would salivate over, the way Chica salivates over garbage. But, sure enough, a compact cardboard box sat tucked inside, overflowing with confiscated Fazcams. The Fazcam itself was molded from the same brown-orange plastic as Freddy's shell, adorned with a tiny top hat and his signature lightning bolt stripe running down the middle and sides. The design was retro, reminiscent of those ancient flash cameras Gregory had seen in old movies. It was about the size of his head, with a front slot that would spat out a printed picture of whatever had been captured. The flash system was cleverly built into two round ears that mimicked Freddy's. Gregory turned the camera over in his hands and let out a small huff of amusement. To think, this was how Gregory's ancestors used to take selfies. No wonder they play outside more. The camera came with a leather neck strap, which Gregory slung around his chest. It was a bit snug, but it would make things less awkward if he needed to run, and easier to aim when it came time to act. Though he hadn't tested it yet, Freddy had claimed that flashing lights were an effective way to disorient and stun any Fazbear robots. Apparently, it was some glitch carried over from previous Endo generations, because Fazbear Entertainment was, of course, the personification of a drunken Sisyphus, constantly rolling a boulder uphill, only to purposefully shoot themselves in the leg and let the boulder roll right back over them. With a sigh, Gregory turned his attention back to the rest of the lockers. In the second to last one, he found a small journal, meant for new hired Fazbear employees. He flipped it open, finding the owner's name, Preston. Apparently, Preston was a new hire working for the Fazbear repairman team. Gregory scanned through the pages, easily doing so because Preston's note-taking was a mess of bullet points and direct quotes from his team lead. It looked like Preston's department wasn't in charge of fixing up the robots, but the facility itself. Power outages, generator repairs, lighting, and all the general infrastructure that kept places like Monty Golf and Fazer Blast running smoothly. Gregory flipped through the pages faster until he spotted the word Monty. whose eyes finally caught Montgomery Gator in the last entry in the notebook, dated for today. Preston seemed to be planning some maintenance in Monte Golf's gondola system right before the Pizzaplex had to close early due to Freddy having another glitch-fueled meltdown during his performance. Apparently, there had been some clanging coming from the ventilation units near Monte Golf. Gregory involuntarily shuddered. Mini Music Men. But Preston didn't know that. It looked like he believed that the noise was some animal stunk at the vent system, making a racket. This was apparently his fifth inspection this week, and he was getting desperate to find an answer. Desperate enough to check the vent system in Mazersize, which apparently shares the same AC system track as Monte Golf. Well, that wasn't exactly ideal, but Gregor was at least happy to have a direction, even if it meant a little backtracking. Before leaving, Gregory flipped a page back. If Preston had been on the catwalks before, maybe he had something on Monty roaming around up there. The page before the last had notes on the catwalks, but it wasn't about Monty. Preston's team lead, marked as Abe, had told him to wear his fall arrest system, which, judging by the notes, looked like a thick vest with a chain connecting the wear to the walkways in case of a fall. Thankfully, according to Abe, no one had ever fallen off the catwalk, but it was better to be safe, because something had once fallen. Glam Rock Bonnie. According to Preston, Abe was informed by the security team that the last place Glam Rock Bonnie had been seen before his decommissioning was in Gator Golf. That was the reason they made the catwalk so difficult to access now. Monty had made it a habit of roaming up there, but Bonnie supposedly had fallen off of it. Gregory frowned. So, that's what happened to Bonnie. His face twisted into a scowl. Not that he was ever one to trust the cynical side of things, but if Bonnie was still active at this time, and Monty was just the mascot of Gator Golf, there was no reason Bonnie would have gone there unless someone had been there with him. Gregory tucked the journal back into its place and fled the security room. His face burned with anger. His eyes narrowed as he sprinted back to the entrance. Monty had taken Freddy's best friend away. He knew that for sure. There was no other explanation. And now, he was going to make Monty pay for it.
Into the Night will be right back after these messages.
This episode of Into the Night was brought to you by Call of Dragons. If you love epic fantasy worlds, this one's for you. Call of Dragons drops you into the magical realm of Tamaris, where you'll team up with elves, orcs, celestials, and goblins to build an army in your name and conquer the world. Each faction has its own unique design and lore, and you can deck out your city however you like. But the real fun starts when you leave the city. You get to battle with your own behemoth. Giant bears, venomous hydras, flame dragons, and even thunder rocks. You and your alliance can tame them, name them, command them, and then send your personal favorites into battle to obliterate those who oppose your rightful rule. There's also a full roster of heroes with powerful skills and magical artifacts you can equip to do wild stuff. Turn invisible, teleport, heal your army, or blast your enemies off of existence with a snap of your fingers. There's treasure to be found and worlds to conquer. If that sounds appealing, Call of Dragons is free to download on PC and mobile. Click the link in the description and start your adventure in Tamaris today. Thank you once again, Call of Dragons, for sponsoring tonight's episode.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Welcome to Mazercise. Work off the calories while you eat. Sign up for a membership pass today. Super cool perks include discounts on pizza, nachos, fries, and cookies. Now that's the smell of fitness.
Making his way to Mazercise was swift and easy for Gregory. Okay, so it was a bit of a hike. Gator Golf was on the first floor of the atrium, and Mazercise was on the top. But thankfully, he didn't encounter anything but staff bot patrols on his way there. He even got to test out his new Faz Cam on them. And let's just say, it worked like a charm. With one flash, he caused three security bots to spasm in confusion and momentarily shut down. And as a bonus, he got a souvenir Polaroid of their reaction to being flashbanged. That was also when Gregory realized the downside of the Faz Cam. While the camera had a generous range for inflicting robotic seizures, there was a significant drawback: the cooldown period. Until the Polaroid finished printing out the picture, the camera wouldn't allow Gregory to snap another photo, and by extension, he couldn't activate the flash. Walking into Mazercise, Gregory was met with an abstract mix of a cafeteria and a fitness room. The center of the lobby featured a professional jazzercise setup, complete with small elevated pink foam pads in front of a small stage. Nearby, several dumbbells and weighted spheres of various colors were scattered about. Surrounding the fitness area were tall tables and high top chairs, each near a snack bar boasting soda fountains, empty rotating pizza ovens, and the promise of freshly baked cookies every hour on the hour. Gregory wasn't sure what to make of the combination of fast food and exercise. Sure, marketing healthy eating and exercise while selling junk food was on brand for Fazbear Entertainment, but that's usually embodied in a mascot character, not an actual attraction people would spend money on. Then again, if this was a decision made not by a human, but by the storyteller's AI program, some large language model designed to create an attraction for Chica, the stupidity was all starting to make sense. Navigating the mismatched mess of poor marketing, Gregory used his security clearances to infiltrate the employee-only rooms and make his way to a small power room next to the Mazercise attraction entrance. The main selling point of Mazercise wasn't just the challenge of beating the maze as fast as possible or the idea of burning calories while you eat, but the promise of a randomly generated maze every hour. The idea was to ensure customers could always come back for a brand new experience and never get bored of it. The problem, however, was that the maze itself was confined to a small area of the Pizzaplex. It was originally a scrapped attraction for Monty before the mini-golf concept was settled on and implemented into the Pizzaplex, with an attitude of, we got this space to fill, just throw this crap in here. So the maze didn't exactly offer an infinite variety of layouts as marketed. Instead, it had a few possible templates, using fixed rotating walls on a dolly system that could change up the maze. Looking at the control setup in the power room, it appeared to be manual rather than an automated system. Fazbear Entertainment had the maze set up with switches that could be pulled in any order, rearranging the walls to form a course that led from one side to the other. This was fine for the company's bottom line, but for Gregory, it wasn't the maze exit he was concerned with. It was crafting a path that would lead him to the back wall, where that vent system was hidden. No, I cannot remain silent on this one. Okay, so at the risk of shattering the immersive illusion of this narrative, I feel compelled to break the fourth wall on this one important footnote. Mazersize is absolute 100% dog shit. There is no joke. There is no meme. This is the one part of Security Breach that even the game's defenders and fans can't ignore and acknowledge that this section sucks. It's a painful experience to try and comprehend, yet somehow a breeze once you learn the solution is the same every time you enter on every playthrough. I mean, let's just look at its future lore reveal. In the Choose Your Own Adventure book, VIP, it was revealed that Mazersize was a flawed and failed attraction that used to be part of Monty's area. It is literally, both mechanically and canonically, trash. So let's break down the reasons real quick. So the mechanic of this section is actually a relatively common puzzle system that Steeple has once done back in Help Wanted. Essentially, Mazersize is a glorified pipe puzzle, where the goal is to rotate pipes to connect one point to another. Simple, right? Except they've taken the concept and slapped it into a maze that you have to navigate yourself. Just replace pipes with pathway to a wall. And guess what? The puzzle is exactly the same one that Steeple shoved into the innards vent repair minigame back in Help Wanted. Same formula, just a different coat of paint. The issue here is that coat of paint is important because of the presentation errors. In the innards vent repair, the player is given an unobstructed view of the pipes. Sure, the room itself is shadowed, but the ambient lighting and mechanics of rotating the pipes are designed well enough that the player can easily see what they're doing. Each press of a button clearly alters the path, making it intuitive to understand how the puzzle works and how the paths are changing. Now, let's talk about Mazersize, where everything goes completely off the rails. First of all, the camera feed is small, ridiculously small, and it's positioned poorly. Instead of seeing the maze from a clear perspective, you're given a small viewpoint from the corner of the room. The camera is set up in the corner to offer a view of the vent opening located in the opposite corner. This means, however, that A, you won't even know where the vent is until you dive into the maze and physically locate it, and B, the furthest walls in the maze, and by conjunction, the ones closest to the vent you're trying to locate, the walls in the foreground will begin to obstruct your view, up to the point where you can't tell how the walls are situated because of how minuscule your view of the maze is. You're basically left fumbling in the dark with no real way to understand the layout or how you're changing it. Furthermore, I don't know who the hell decided this, but unlike Ennard's vent repair, where pipes were numerically labeled and the player was given buttons with numbers matching to which pipe they would rotate, making it abundantly clear how the puzzle worked to the point that a child could understand it, the maze walls and Security Breach are decorated with a mishmash of colors and symbols. Instead of helpful, clearly marked levers, you get numerically categorized ones that don't match anything you're seeing. Not only can you barely figure out what path you're creating from your limited viewpoint, but the levers themselves are so poorly classified that there's no real connection between what they do and how they alter the maze. It's a chaotic mess that only adds to the frustration. What blows my mind is that the whole camera system didn't even need to be part of this puzzle in the first place. From a gameplay perspective, and even a grounded world-building standpoint, wouldn't it have made so much more sense to just use a large screen next to the levers that featured a digital top-down map of the maze, which would have made everything so much clearer? Imagine the maze walls being colorized on this screen, and each lever having a colored number corresponding to a selection of the walls, so players could easily understand which levers change which section of the maze. You could even display the entry and exit and vent areas on the map so players would always know where they need to start and where they need the path to end. The issue is this makes far too much sense, so the game didn't do that. And I get it, Security Breach's development was rushed towards the end. Sony essentially forced Scott and Steeple to push out the game because of state of play advertising and console exclusivity promises. But seriously, if they couldn't finish the puzzle design properly, why not just simplify it? Why not just make it an actual maze that the players have to traverse? You could have had Chica or Roxy wandering the maze to add a threat. And since they already gave the player the fast camp by this point, this would have been the perfect time to use it. Let the player learn how to wield it. The potential was there to salvage it, but for some reason they decided to dig their heels in, and the result was disastrous. And since I'm on a roll here, let's also talk about the incoherently designed Faz Cam and Phaser Blaster. Shout out to that one Boyo who brought up something critical about survival horror games in our last conversation before I wrote this script. One of the key features of survival horror is inventory management, specifically managing limited resources. Think about Five Nights at Freddy's and the power system, or even FNAF 2 and the music box. They're all resources you have to manage. And in another game like Resident Evil, ammunition is a huge part of that game. But in Security Breach, where you can stun almost any enemy with either the Phaser Blaster or the Faz Cam, there is no resource management at all. Your ammo just regenerates automatically. No need to find batteries or worry about running out of charges for either weapon. It's a fun mechanic in theory, but it completely undermines the tension and survival horror aspects when there's no scarcity. It's like the game wants to have its cake and eat it too, but it just ends up serving up stale slices. Awesome game design, Woolsteel. Very cool. After Gregory adjusted the control panel to chart a course through the maze, he made his way to the entrance of Mazersize. The maze itself was unremarkable, a foam floor composed of the same material as yoga mats, with walls adorned in patterns of delectable foods that emitted the faint aroma of the dishes depicted. Gregory found himself contemplating whether licking one of the pepperoni prints would lead to the taste of fresh pepperoni pizza dancing on his taste buds. Finally reaching the vent, Gregory noticed that Preston, or whoever had come before him, had already removed the vent cover, sparing him the additional labor. Dropping to all fours, he scuttled cautiously through the narrow vent shaft, his ears attuned to the distant sounds of the tinkling footsteps of the many music men. After roughly a minute and a half of cramped crawling, the familiar swamp tones of Monty's Gator Golf ambient music filled the air. A minute later, green light began to filter into the dank crawl space. And after one final minute, Gregory found himself stepping onto the metal grating of a catwalk, which provided a sweeping view of Monty's Gator Golf. From his elevated position, easily three stories above the course, the staff bots below resembled little white ants scurrying in circles. The plastic palm trees dotted the mini-golf area, some extending just beyond the catwalk, and Gregory's keen eye soon caught sights of power conduits and maintenance boxes, cleverly hidden within the trunks of the palms. These structures, which would have been at waist height for working adults on the gangway, perverted the area with an unsettling blend of jungle excursion and industrial appropriation of nature. From where Gregory was standing, which was more so an observation deck of the entire Gator Golf attraction, a quick leap would bring him to the catwalk. But in between was the Gator Golf gondola, a large metal track embedded in the ceiling, from which carts shaped like Monty lazily rolled across the course before disappearing into swallows in the wall. The gondola, from what Gregory recalled, paints the story of Montgomery Gator for anyone interested in the alligator's lore. After completing its circuit, the gondola would reappear from a secondary opening above the golf course. The docking station was likely hidden inside the walls, but that was of no concern to Gregory. No, his primary task was getting Monty to this location and then triggering the Hurricane Hole-in-One to bring him down. From his vantage point, the catwalk sprawled out like a maze, with offshoots connecting to other gangway paths, all leading towards larger palm trees, concealing fuse boxes, or what appeared to be golf ball turret stations. Gregory couldn't fathom the purpose of these turrets, beyond the possibility of employees using them to annoy guests with wayward shots. They didn't seem to serve any real utility. Perhaps they were meant for future expansion of Monty's Gator Golf? Something told Gregory that the only people who'd enjoy such an idea were those with a penchant for irritating others. So, Montgomery Gator fans. Gritting his teeth, Gregory pressed his back against the wall, waiting for the gondola to pass by again. When the time came, he took a running leap, hurling himself across the gap toward the metal gangway. He cleared the railing on his side of the catwalk. But his momentum carried him too far forward. When his feet finally made contact with the grated metal, he was abruptly halted by a painful thump to his bruised chest, courtesy of the second railing. Momentarily stunned by the impact, he seethed silent expletives through his clenched teeth before pushing himself to his feet. A quick check of his pockets confirmed that everything he gathered so far was still with him. Key cards, flashlight, phaser blaster, and phaz cam. Gear, wounds, and all. With his bearings regained, Gregory shifted his focus to finding a way to lure Monty into Gator Golf. That plan was still forming in his head when a low growl rumbled from the hole in the wall where the gondolas arrived. The latest gondola to enter had a large metallic alligator with a blazing red mohawk hanging precariously from the side, like a pirate clinging to the rope of a ship, waiting to board an unsuspecting frigate. Monty was here already. His current condition struck Gregory as unsettling. His usually pristine green plastic shell was marred by streaks of black grime and dark tears, and several spiderweb cracks were beginning to form across his entire body. Gregory hadn't even done anything to Monty yet, so why did he look like he was disintegrating overnight? Monty let out a roar that rattled the gangway beneath Gregory's feet. Using his immense metallic weight, Monty swung the gondola, building momentum before launching himself from the cart to land on the catwalk just ahead of Gregory. The force of the impact was enough to shake the entire network of gangways, sending them swaying like a pendulum. The moment he stood, Monty scanned the catwalk, his eyes settling on a nearby golf ball turret, small and insignificant compared to his hulking form. With a metallic snarl, Monty raised both fists high above his head and brought them down with the force of a warhammer. The turret shattered into a flurry of sparks and flying golf balls, like debris from a demolished building. Gregory's heart pounded as panic finally turned into action. He quickly reached for his phaz cam slung across his chest, his fingers fumbling slightly in the heart of the moment. A quick click of the button, and two bright cones of light shot forward, bathing everything in their blinding glow. The world ahead of him faded into a blank canvas, waiting to be reshaped. He hoped the stun would daze Monty long enough to repair the trap. But when the light from the phaz cam receded, Gregory's breath caught in his throat. Monty was still standing, unshaken, as though the flash hadn't even fazed him. Gregory stared, dumbfounded. Monty, as if sensing Gregory's disbelief, gave a low, mocking crook of his jaw. almost as though he were smiling. He tilted his head with exaggerated slowness, his sunglasses sliding down his snout to reveal glowing red irises burning like embers behind his plastic eyelids. Sunglasses. God damn it. He's got sunglasses.
Rock and roll!
Into the Night will be right back after these messages.
Monty charged forward, each megaton stomp rattling the catwalk like a ship struggling against a rising tide. The entire gangway trembled beneath his weight, cables groaning under the strain. Gregory had no way to stop him. His gadgets were useless, and the only other option, leaping overboard and hoping for the best, was just as much of a gamble as staying put. Those sunglasses, they were shielding Monty's eyes. Gregory had no means of stunning him, and there was no way he could outrun him indefinitely. He couldn't just keep running in circles, desperately hoping the pizzaplex would reopen before Monty caught him. It was inevitable. Monty would catch him, and when he did, Gregory had no doubt he'd be torn apart. His brain kicked into overdrive. A sudden burst of instinct had him veering onto a new path, darting down the middle of the gangway. He was just fast enough to throw Monty off, unable to halt his own momentum in time. The gator overshot the turn. He reached for the railing to slow himself down, but his sheer weight and strength reached the metal bar free, bending it into a sideways U before he finally managed to stop and reorient himself. Gregory slapped both hands against his face. Think! He can stop him. He already has a plan. The Hurricane Hole-in-One. It was still here, still functional. He just needed to reach it now, even if it meant throwing caution in his survival odds out the window. He glanced back. Monty was further away now, but still gaining. Every turn Gregory took bought him precious seconds. Monty's sheer size made sharp turns impossible, forcing him to overshoot again and again. If they were on solid ground, Monty could have easily Superman jumped like he did in the VIP area, cutting Gregory off in an instant. But here? He must have been smart enough to realize the gangway couldn't handle both the impact of his leaps and the narrow margins for his landing. That meant Gregory had one advantage. He could use this mess of gangways against him. Thinking fast, Gregory sprinted forward, zigzagging through the catwalks like a game of Pac-Man. The turrets, which were previously a mystery, were now his potential lifeline. He just needed to find the right path, a route that would buy him enough time to reach one before Monty caught up. The chase was on. It was an arduous 5 minutes, at least it felt like 5 minutes, long enough for Gregory's legs to burn and his lungs to ache. But finally, Monty had fallen far enough behind for Gregory to risk climbing onto a golf turret with a decent vantage point. Gripping both handles, he found the turret surprisingly smooth, gliding effortlessly as he aimed. With a deep breath, he set his sights on the large target in the shape of a neon head of Monty for the Hurricane Hole-in-One and started firing. Golf balls, each a different color of the rainbow, launched with blistering velocity, streaking through the air in blurs of vibrant light. They struck the target with rhythmic thaps, but none had yet hit the bullseye. Gregory stole a glance behind him. Monty was closing in, weaving his way through the catwalk with relentless determination. Too close. Way too close. Turning back, Gregory adjusted his aim and fired again. A blue golf ball struck dead center in the neon Monty's mouth, triggering a brilliant eruption of flashing bulbs along the target, blinking like a neon Vegas sign. Ahead of the light show, a small green button shaped like Freddy's head, illuminated next to a power box on the catwalk. That was it. That was his way out. Gregory didn't hesitate. Abandoning the turret, he sprinted down the catwalk toward the bucket below. Behind him, Monty reached the turret, rage boiling over. With a single, effortless swipe, he ripped the turret clean off its base, sending it clattering into the abyss below without so much as a stumble. Gregory ran harder, his breath coming in ragged gasps. He reached the edge of the catwalk just before the massive purple bucket. Then he turned, and his breath caught. Monty had made it up to him. This was it. No more places to run. The gator slowed, savoring the moment. His guttural, mechanical laughter rumbled through the air, thick with triumph. Step by step, he advanced, heavy metal feet clanking against the catwalk. Then, three more steps. Monty moved onto the section of the gangway, marked in red, hazard railings, dipping beneath his legs, right where the hurricane hole in one would drop. Gregory slammed the button with his palm. A series of metallic clangs rang out as the massive bucket jerked forward, spilling its weight. Bells and cheers erupted from the speakers, masking the groan of stressed metal beneath them. Monty whirled his head just in time to see the bucket tilt, momentum carrying it straight toward him. Then, to Gregory's horror, Monty threw up his arms and caught it. For a moment, the gator held firm, stopping himself from being knocked over. But the gangway wasn't built to handle that kind of weight. Already strained beneath Monty's sheer mass, the catwalk was giving in. The metal groaned. The grated flooring began to buckle, snapping upward and downward like twisted twine coming undone. The balustrade between Gregory and Monty cracked apart, shattering like twigs. Gregory barely had time to react. With a desperate lunge, he flung himself at the nearest railing post, wrapped his arms and legs around it just as the gangway beneath Monty folded in half. The entire structure pitched downward at a sharp 90-degree angle, sending Monty hurtling toward the ground below. Gregory could do nothing but hold on and watch. Monty flailed, his massive frame twisting in free fall. But the first impact wasn't the floor. His waist slammed into the metal lighting rig above the hologram stage. The column dented from the force. But it was Monty who took the worst of it. The impact folded him in half with a sickening snap, bisecting him cleanly at the stomach. Monty's head smashed into a second column, plastic teeth scattered like shards of glass, servos whined in protest, sparks bursting at his jaw, dislocating it from his neck. Remnants of Monty's body cratered into the stage below, shattering the wood on impact. The hologram system, the one of Montgomery Gator in his prime rocking out in a larger-than-life recreation, flickered wildly. Monty's projected image distorted, his form twisted in a nightmare swirl of fractured limbs and incoherent shapes, warping and shifting like something out of a fever dream. Then, with one final flicker, the lights went out. Monty was no more. Gregory let out a shaky breath of relief. It didn't last. The gangway shuddered. A sharp twang rang out as the wires holding it to the ceiling snapped loose. Like a fishing line being cast, the cables went downward, only to catch at the last second, halting with a sharp jolt. Gregory squeezed his eyes shut through the whole ordeal. When he dared to open them, he realized how much his orientation had changed. Before the collapse, he'd been 3 stories up from the ground. Now, he hovered just above Monty's stage, about a single story above the mini golf course. His hands ached from gripping the metal pole, his muscles trembling from the sheer force of holding on. Slowly, cautiously, he peeled his arms free and let his feet touch the platform. His legs wobbled, but he forced himself to stand and to move forward. Monty was sprawled just a few feet ahead of him. Gregory took careful steps closer, heart pounding as he took in the damage. The gator animatronic was utterly wrecked. His once menacing jaw hung uselessly from his skull, dislocated and slack. His cold, lifeless eyes stared ahead. One lens of his signature star-shaped sunglasses cracked. The other shattered completely. His left arm shell casing had been ripped clean off and now lay discarded across the floor, along with jagged pieces of his shattered outer plating. The worst of it, though, was the gaping hole in Monty's chest, exposing the skeletal frame beneath. His lower half was completely severed. His legs lost somewhere in the ball pit bayou below, leaving only a middle tail of his spine. Gregory swallowed hard. He crouched down, his fingers brushing against a nearby scrap of metal. Whether it belonged to the gangway, the lighting system, or Monty himself, he wasn't sure. With a deep breath, he wedged it under Monty's claws and pried. The servos resisted at first, but Monty's shattered form made the process easier than it should have been. With one final yank, the sharp, cracked hands came free. Gregory exhaled. This was it. Monty's claws. The last thing he needed to access Roxy Raceway. Now, he just had to meet up with Freddy at parts and service. Tucking the claws away, Gregory climbed down from the stage, using the oversized speakers as makeshift steps. He moved quickly, eager to put distance between himself and Monty's ruined shell, as he made his way down toward the front of Gator Gulp. Then, a sound. Faint. Strange. Archaic. Gregory froze. His eyes darted across the dimly lit course, searching for the source. Then he saw it. An arcade cabinet. That wasn't unusual by itself. This was Fazbear Entertainment, after all. What unsettled Gregory was how out of place it felt. It stood alone, isolated in the middle of the ball pit, perched on a tiny island connected to the main course by narrow wooden bridges. Gregory couldn't explain it. It was like something was calling him toward it. But his feet apparently understood, because before he knew it, he was walking toward the lone cabinet. Up close, the machine looked normal. Standard Monty branding, nothing broken or glitching. But the screen, that's what made Gregory's eyes widen. It was a mini-golf game. Someone had left it mid-play, paused at the final hole. The screen displayed a concert stage, holograms of Monty, Roxy, and Chica, rocking out with their instruments. But something was off. Monty was the frontman. Gregory's eyebrows raised. Where was Freddy? he gripped the joystick and moved the in-game camera, tilting it downward, searching, scanning. Then he saw it. Beneath the stage, tucked away in the shadows, sat a dumpster. A dumpster overflowing with discarded junk. A graveyard for things no longer wanted or needed. And peeking out from the refuse, half buried up to his stomach hatch, was a limp, deactivated Glam Rock Freddy.
Into the Night will be right back after these messages.
Before we conclude tonight's episode, let's take a moment to dissect the mystery of Glamrock Bonnie. Throughout this audiobook series, and indeed the video game itself, we've explored several questions surrounding his disappearance. Why was Bonnie decommissioned? Why was it done in such a way that even staff members were confused by the decision, especially when Guest openly questioned his absence from Bonnie Bowl? And why, despite Fazbear Entertainment's vast resources, did they not choose to replace Bonnie's endoskeleton and instead elevate Monty, originally a temporary stand-in, to a permanent role in the glam rock band? Well, let's examine what we do know. Glamrock Freddy considered Bonnie a close friend and was saddened by his departure. This suggests Bonnie's removal was seen as a tragedy by the other animatronic members of the Glamrock band, given their advanced AI designed to replicate human-like thought processes rather than being possessed by supernatural phenomena. One could argue that removing a core band member could have triggered distress among the remaining Glamrock animatronics. However, Freddy also speculates when entering the Indo warehouse that he may be just one in a series of Freddies. If that is the case, could Bonnie also be simply one of many? We know that beneath the Pizzaplex, countless defunct and discarded animatronics are left to rot in a mechanical graveyard. Is it possible that Gregory's Glamrock Freddy isn't the first? And if replacements are common, why wasn't Bonnie given the same treatment? This brings us to the question of Montgomery Gator. Fazbear Entertainment's internal messaging suggests that his elevation was more so an experiment, perhaps to test his popularity against Bonnie's. However, the company has a history of abandoning attractions. From Foxy's Log Garage to the theater once hosting the daycare attendant, if Fazbear was willing to reverse decision and shutter projects, why permanently retire Bonnie instead of simply repurposing him? This suggests something more than simple brand reorganization. Something that possibly needed to be covered up. Now, let's look at the facts. Bonnie's last known location before his disappearance was Monty Golf. Monty frequently roamed the catwalks of his attraction. Hidden within Monty's domain is an arcade cabinet, seemingly crafted by the storyteller AI, that tells an unsettling story in the visuals. In it, Monty is not just another band member, but the leader, with Freddy discarded in a dumpster below the stage. Does Monty seek to usurp Freddy? And did Monty kill Bonnie? We don't have definitive proof, but calling the evidence circumstantial, I believe, would be a stretch. And with all that said, I think we have found the perfect stopping point for tonight's program of Into the Night. How will Freddy react to all these new parts Gregory has accrued? Will Monty come back just the same as Chica has? And how will Gregory exactly decommission Roxanne Wolf. All that and more next time on Into the Night. Thank you so much for listening. If you'd like to stay updated, please consider subscribing, following, or sharing this podcast. It truly helps us broaden our reach. Consider following us on our Twitter at Fazbear Podcast, joining our Discord, or supporting us on our merch store or Patreon using the various links in the description of this episode. I have been your host, Nick, and I would like to thank all of you once again for listening. Have a good night, and drive home safe.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.